And welcome to Northern Gardening. We are your hosts this evening, Joan Farnham. Joan?
Good evening.
And Diane Booth. And we also have Eric Hahn in the studio. Eric, say hi.
Hello.
And Eric is a local CSA gardener in Cook County who'll be sharing with us his favorite tomato varieties. So, but tonight, we're going to be talking about the most popular item grown in containers or in gardens, tomatoes. I don't know if anybody, I mean, almost everybody up here grows at least one tomato, almost.
Yeah, they get one.
If they're lucky. So we're going to talk about why they maybe don't get just one. We want them to get more than that. And on the line, we have Samantha Johnson, who is the award-winning author of a new book, A Beginner's Guide to Vegetable Gardening. And we have it in the studio here. It'll be in my office if anybody wants to check it out.
It's a beautiful book. It's really well bound. It's got incredible photographs. Just look at the photographs. I'm going, oh, I can't wait.
I know. With all that snow out there, it looks like spring.
Oh, look at these
kohlrabi. Okay, Joan, calm down. It's not quite yet. And Samantha lives in northern Wisconsin. She loves unusual and heirloom tomatoes, which she's going to be talking about tonight. And she also does something else fun, kind of off the topic, but she raises Welsh mountain ponies and judges horse shows across the United States. So welcome, Samantha.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're excited to have you. In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking to Changbin Chen, and I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. I'm sure he'll let us know. He's the Associate Professor of Horticulture Science at the University of Minnesota, and Chen and his students have been playing around with tomato chromosomes, so we're kind of going from heirlooms to the other side of the spectrum with tomatoes, to develop some short-day dwarf tomatoes that have extremely high yields and could be used in our climate to grow tomatoes commercially. That's where they're headed with it. So, so this evening it'll be interesting to kind of explore the different facets of tomato growing in our climate. Northern Gardening airs on the second Thursday of every month from 7 to 8 p.m., and it's hosted by the Northwoods Food Project and Cook County Extension. It's also rebroadcast at 6 a.m. The following Saturday morning of the month. So call in, everybody out there, and ask your tomato questions. Mm-hmm. And also, we want to know what tomato varieties you're growing and how you're growing them so that we can share that information with everybody else. As Joan says, sometimes people only get one tomato, and we want to make sure you get more than one this year. The number to call is 387-1070 or 1-800-473-9847. You can also email questions and comments to WTIP@boreal.org. So, Samantha, we're going to start out with a bang. There are many different ways, you know, that you can categorize tomatoes, and we probably have some listeners out there who are kind of unfamiliar with some of those categories. So let's kind of start our discussion off with what exactly is an heirloom tomato, and how does that differ from a hybrid? What does open pollinated mean, or an F1 hybrid?
Great question to start with.
Well, then we're all on the same page, hopefully.
Exactly. All right, well, heirloom varieties, as opposed to a hybrid, open-pollinated varieties breed true, meaning that if you save the seeds from that variety, the next generation is going to exhibit the same characteristics of the parent plant. A hybrid variety is when you have a deliberate cross of two varieties, and if you save seeds from a hybrid, you're not going to get the same characteristics as the parent plant. People like hybrid varieties because they tend to have that what's called hybrid vigor. You have the disease resistance and you have increased yields, and so there's a lot of good characteristics to hybrids. But the open-pollinated varieties are older, generally older, and have a great deal of history behind them. The heirloom varieties, you'll see there's a lot of variance with regard to the exact terminology behind heirloom and what it means. A lot of people reserve the term for varieties prior to, say, 1940. Some people classify it as before 1950. yeah. I've seen some people use World War II as the benchmark. but basically, they mean they want an heirloom as a variety that's been around for a long time. It has a history. It has provenance. And that appeals to a lot of people because you're carrying on something that's been handed down from one generation to the next.
And I would expect through natural selection, too, from one generation to the next, it's adapted itself to kind of the conditions where it's growing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you're hoping for improvement over the years as you're selecting plants.
Right.
Basically, all heirlooms are open-pollinated, but not all open-pollinated varieties are heirlooms, depending on the date of which they're developed.
Sure. So you can have open-pollinated varieties that have been done in 1985 and 1990,
exactly.
but they aren't heirlooms.
Right. And the one really common one is the green zebra, which is such a popular variety.
What is it?
Green zebra.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And but it was developed, I think, in the 80s, and so it's not technically, to some people, it's not technically an heirloom, and yet it has all the characteristics of an heirloom. It's just not old enough yet in some people's minds to really classify it that way.
Huh. Well, and I think because there's such a resurgence of interest in heirlooms, I think some of the breeders, too, are actually looking at how can we develop some new open-pollinated varieties that taste good like heirlooms and have some of those characteristics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because that's where the market seems to be going somewhat.
Well, and one thing that caught my eye recently in Baker Creek Rare Seeds Catalog,
mm-hmm.
they have added 10 new varieties this year from a tomato grower in California that he said he's one of the few breeders today trying to develop new open-pollinated varieties in different colors, different sizes, and different... he's working with striped varieties, and they're just beautiful. He's getting blues and his reds and...
Blues?
Blue is the new hot thing.
Wow!
Oh, I don't know if I like to eat a blue tomato.
Well, they like it because...
more anthocyanins.
Exactly, and you're getting all those health benefits, and it's got to be one of the coolest things you could possibly grow.
So everybody's going to grow it just because nobody else has done it, right?
Exactly.
Wow, hot market there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Samantha, you've grown a number of these over the years. So talk about some of the varieties you like best. You mentioned green zebra. I think that's one you've grown.
Green zebra is one of my favorite tried and true.
Okay, so what do you like about it? Why do you grow it?
Green zebra is just, it's so reliable. It produces, the flavor isn't necessarily everyone's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think it's too tart. They think it's a little bit sort of sharp flavored. I like it personally. They're really good in salad, and I just like the reliability of it and the gorgeous stripes. It's just really pretty in the garden, and so that is a lot of fun. The red variety, the red zebra, mm-hmm. is similar. Probably not quite as reliable in the production department. I would say it doesn't produce as well as the green.
So what zone are you growing in? Are you growing in zone four?
We're in that little pocket of four.
Okay.
4A, actually.
4A, all right.
But I typically go by three just because our winters are so harsh.
Okay.
And technically, from the specs that you see on the charts as far as minimum temperatures in the winter, we're actually a three.
Okay.
So
are you growing most of your... Now, green zebra is a 75 to 80-day mm-hmm. tomato, so you must be growing in a greenhouse or you're growing them outside?
No, they're growing outside.
Okay, so you are doing that in outside. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, how about... Eric, have you tried some of these?
Sure. Well, yeah, I I have tried some of the green and darker tomatoes, and I confess that sometimes I'm unsure when to harvest them. So sometimes when you say they're reliable, I think it takes a little experience because I've often either find myself picking them too early or too late. So I need a little more practice with some of them. But I do grow some heirlooms, but I also grow some hybrids, and I think it's for some of the reasons Samantha said, it's a certain vigor and reliability. And
which heirlooms?
Well, I still love Brandywine. I think I probably should confess that I grew up in the Brainwine Valley. So it's a nostalgic thing for me, too.
Okay. Oh, yeah, so it has nice history for you.
Yeah, but that gets back to what Samantha was saying. Like, you know, these heirlooms have history, and there's kind of an emotional attachment to them. It goes beyond even what they look like or taste like. And,
yeah.
And again, Brandywine is a long day variety.
Yes,
so
yes.
Are you growing in the greenhouse?
I am. And so I had given up on it, and I was growing Prudence Purple as a kind of a stand-in.
Right.
It's fairly similar. But it's a quicker ripening. And,
yeah, it's like a 72-day variety or something.
So Brandywine is how many days?
It's like 80, 85, 90. Yeah.
Yeah. Know,
how about Samantha? Are you growing any of those?
Not Brandywine, just because they do take so long. I have a hard time with those.
Mm-hmm.
The longest that I try for is German Pink. That's about an 85-day.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten some. They're worth trying for. They're just beautiful, gorgeous, that pink color. Supposedly up to 2 pounds. I haven't gotten any that size, but it's something to try for.
Well, and how do you find, you know, some people who grow heirlooms say, well, you know, they're wonderful when I get them, but the amount that I get is less than what I would get growing hybrids. So how does that, maybe Eric and Samantha, you want to talk about that a little bit?
I would say, for certain varieties, I would agree with that in terms of some of the, like the gold medal or the German pink. It's hard to get a good crop out of them. That mm-hmm. they tend to produce, they're few and there they are, but they're nice ones you do. But the smaller, the cherry tomatoes, like the Mexico midget is one that's mm-hmm. 60 to 70 day. The other ones that like Amish paste. That's longer, but they do really produce well. It's more actually trying various varieties and just doing a sort of a trial and error, see what works for you, because there's some that just produce and produce and produce. Beams Yellow Pear is one that's absolutely phenomenal in that respect. It'll produce all day long, all summer long. It's really impressive.
And that's a yellow pear.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, and it's like an inch and a half long, or it's pretty small.
Exactly.
But really good flavor, right?
Delicious.
So okay. What do you do, Eric?
Well, I think I grow a number of different tomatoes each year, kind of to hedge my bets a little bit, so that I'm hoping that I'll get a good crop of heirlooms. But if I don't, I know I have other tomatoes that can step in and fill the gap. And I think that I kind of assume that, you know, as we're giving these to our shareholders, that they're going to get like a big slicer, like a Brandywine, and then a bunch of smaller tomatoes too. And so that slicer, you know, that's for your hamburgers and your BLTs and that sort of thing. But then it's not maybe as, conducive to salads anyway. So yeah, if you get one nice big tomato a week, that's
pretty good, I guess, right?
Good.
Yeah, especially if it's coming out of Cook County, zone 3 and 4, right?
Right. And then the smaller ones that are more reliable and productive are filling in there too.
So Samantha, one of the varieties I'd never heard of this variety you had listed was, and I'm going to say this wrong, Wapsipinicon peach.
Right.
How do you say that?
You said it, Wapsipinicon peach.
Okay, talk about that one.
That has to be one of my absolute favorites.
And it's fuzzy.
It is fuzzy.
Oh. Yuck.
It's a little, that's well, hence the name. It's like a little peach, and the color, I love this sort of a pale, kind of creamy, almost orange, but not quite. And the taste is just unlike anything I've ever had in any other variety. It's just phenomenal. I wouldn't say it's the best producer ever. It's not going to hold up to a Beams Yellow Pear in terms of abundant productivity, but the ones you get are worth it. They're, wow. It's won the taste testing competitions through Seed Savers in years past. So.
And so would that be mainly a fresh-eating tomato? You wouldn't use it for other things? Or?
I suppose you could try it. I eat them fresh just because they're there. And
and what, you're working out in the garden, and what the heck, have one, right?
Exactly.
Like an apple.
Right, why not? So, okay. No, that's a fabulous variety. But there's others similar to it. There's other peach varieties kind of in that same family.
So there's a whole group of these fuzzy kind of coated tomatoes. Have you tried any of the other ones?
I tried another kind. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. It wasn't the Wapsipinica, no, and it didn't have the same flavor. I was disappointed.
Okay.
So.
Well, do you know, do you eat your tomatoes raw, mostly raw, or do you have varieties you grow for sauces and all that, the rest of the
sauces? Mainly raw. Mainly raw, but there are good varieties for sauces. I know people like the Amish paste for that. They like the Cherokee Purple. Cherokee Purple is interesting because it has that sort of almost a mealy texture that it works nicely and that sort of thing. A lot of people love the flavor on the Cherokee Purple. It's been a taste test winner also in different competitions, but it's never been my personal favorite. But it does. It produces. It's worth growing strictly for the fact that it's a 75 to 90 day. Yeah. For a larger tomato, it really puts out the fruit.
Yeah, that was my most. Last year, that was my most productive heirloom, Cherokee Purple. Yeah.
They're an awesome variety, and a neat story behind them too.
Tell us the story people who are listening.
It has to do with the Cherokee Indians down south somewhere, and the seeds were handed down, and finally
South Carolina. They're from South Carolina.
Finally, somebody handed them over to. I'm not sure if it was Seed Savers originally or one of the other seed saving organizations, and he said, here you go. This is this variety, and it's because of the unusual coloring, it caught everyone's eye. It's a sort of dusty brown rose sort of color, and it just took off because it's like, wow, this is sort of a purple tomato, and it produced like crazy, and it was so it has that history going way, 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 way back that people just really kind of latch on to that history and the sentiment value.
Wow, that's a great story about purple Cherokee. It's enough to convince me to try doing it. Because tomatoes were originally domesticated in Mexico. So that tomato of the Cherokees came up from Mexico. I mean, it goes all the way back there.
Right.
Holy mackerel.
It's kind of fun to think about, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Well, now, if anybody else is really interested in what's happening on this program, we'd sure like a call or two, 387-1070. And for your comments about your favorite tomato varieties, questions that you have that we're not answering, please call 387-1070.
Or you can also call 1-800-473-9847 if you're out of the listening area.
Or you can email at WTIP@boreal.org. Okay.
So now one of the questions Eric had was about with green tomatoes and maybe different pink ones, or people probably who are growing them the first time do wonder, how do you know when they're ripe?
Yeah, good one.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Because you can't go by color. You go, if you're growing red tomatoes, okay. Even though like Juliet, which is a hybrid that I grow, and I know Joan has grown it, you have to really, it turns red.
I had
red.
No idea about when to pick that darn thing.
Well, it turns red, and it takes a really long time. You have to leave it on there. Because if you pick it when it first turns red, it tastes terrible. Yeah. But if you leave it on a long time, then it tastes much better.
And they will sit off the vine for quite a long time, too, and then get sweeter.
Yeah. Yeah. So green zebra, how do we know when to pick that one?
That can be. It's tricky. It's tricky. I go a lot by the feel of it. If they start out extra firm and they get, you know, that little bit softer feeling when they're closer to being ripe. Some of it's going to come down to picking one just to see and see how the flavor is. And if
it's not,
generally,
if it's not good, you wait a little while.
that's how I pick apples.
Kind of right, like that. Yeah. But a lot of it's the feel. You can just sort of tell after you've done it a lot, this one's still too firm. It's just not quite there yet. They get that little bit of a softer feel. So it's hard to describe.
Yeah.
I think I know.
Each variety is a little bit different. And I think we have a caller on the line. So welcome.
I grow basically heirlooms also, and the green zebra is one of them that I like. It starts getting yellow at the top, yellow with the green. But I grew last year the Mexican midget and had no success with it whatsoever. I wouldn't grow it again. But I'm wondering if you've grown the Russo Sicilian. Have you grown that one? It looks like a flower. It's flat, mm-hmm. and it's got petals. It's just gorgeous, and it's a really nice eating.
Yeah, well, I grew it, and the flavor was really rotten, but that was just my soil. So how about you, Samantha? Have you tried that one?
No, that's not one that I have tried, but I would be interested in trying
it. It's a beautiful one, and I'm assuming our caller has grown it and liked the flavor?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So soils also, people who are listening out there, you know, I think that's partly why there's so much variation as far as taste and flavor goes,
I think so too.
It's the soils?
Temperature?
I think nighttime temperature
is a big one.
Yeah,
really?
I do mm-hmm. more and more so because I'll get these tomatoes going in the high tunnel, and you know they're growing just fine. But the nighttime temperatures are getting down in the 40s, and it starts to affect their flavor. So some of these really slow ripening tomatoes. I'm still on the fence about, because even though, you know, the plants are still thriving, they're not necessarily getting the flavor that I'm looking for.
You don't get
for.
All those, that complex sugars
yeah.
and developing.
Oh, well, yeah, that would be the risk for a long ripening tomato.
Right.
Your
yeah.
brandy wine sometimes
right.
might
it,
be, yeah.
Yeah.
You can cut it. It looks great.
I
Put
know.
It a lot of mustard and ketchup on the hamburger. You can't tell.
Well, and I think for people in colder climates like we are when we're growing things, it you have to grow them for like 3 years, you know, because the weather changes, and that makes a big
oh,
difference.
Okay.
That's why oftentimes I'll say, well, people will ask me about a new variety, Mexican Midge, and I've grown that one and not had success, but I didn't grow it for 3 years. I only grew it for 2 years. Well, maybe the third year it would have been very successful. I don't know. I think it does make a difference. So,
okay.
All right. Any other thing? Is our caller still on the line? Oh, she said thank you. Okay. All right. Good comment, though.
Yeah, thank you. So what else have we got going here that we need to ask about? Well, fertility and, you know, micronutrients. And is that all a factor in flavor?
I think it can be. And certainly in productivity. I mean, tomatoes are one of those things where it's easy to go overboard on the nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't get the
what about adding a little bit of calcium or whatever it's called to keep from blossom end rot? Does that work?
I think it helps. I mean, I do it.
How much do you add?
Just I'm not very scientific about it, but I know that I have not had problems with blossom end rot since I've been thinking
yeah.
about it.
How about you, Samantha? What do you think about fertilizers and different things?
I don't do a lot of that. Generally, the heirlooms have been very healthy and have not had issues with disease to speak of. So I tend to be minimal and try to aim for as much organic as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to amend more than necessary.
Try not to overfeed, kind of have
exactly,
a... Yeah.
Exactly.
Do you add... You mean, do you have a lot of compost on? You add a lot of compost to your...
Yes.
Okay.
So you are adding quite a bit of nutrients that way.
In that respect, yes. But as far as other types.
Supplements. Of okay.
Right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you're growing them outdoors, and I think that makes a big difference.
It does make, oh, absolutely.
With heirlooms.
And practices are going to be different in indoors versus out. Sure.
Well, and you get a lot more wind coming through. You don't have that in a closed environment like a cold frame or a greenhouse or something.
Absolutely.
You have more high humidity, you know, so if a plant is a little more susceptible to disease issues, then you're going to have a little more problem with that.
Right.
Do you do much in the way of, say, trimming up the bottoms of the plants or to reduce the some of the disease that can...
A little here and there, but not tons.
Do you mulch with anything?
A little mulch here and there. I experiment from year to year to see if mulch them this year, mulch them not so much the next year. I don't notice a lot of difference one way or the other, but it depends on the summer. If we're having a really warm or really warm, really wet, whether it's dry, you know, when we're dry,
sure.
I try to mulch more because it does help keep the soil more moist and keeps things. From drying out as quickly. So it's more of a case-by-case, year-by-year thing.
How about that red mulch you're supposed to put out around tomatoes that is supposed to, I mean, make them ripen up faster?
I haven't tried those. It
seems like a con job to me.
I don't do it myself. No, I don't. But
research has shown that it actually does increase your productivity.
It's really? About the wavelength of the reflective light.
Although we have trialed it here in Cook County and didn't notice that much of a difference, maybe because of our climate. But I think we have another caller on the line. So we'll say welcome to our caller if you have a question or a comment.
Yeah, I have a question about choosing seeds for tomatoes. Could you talk about the comparison between selecting seeds from, you know, the best previous fruits that a person's grown versus, you know, trying different varieties? There's so many different varieties of tomatoes, it would take a person a lifetime to find something good. Wondering which is the best way, or
So you're talking about saving seed,
right?
Or from a tomato that you've grown, assuming it's an heirloom that you're growing.
Correct.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that, Samantha?
Saving seed can be tricky with the tomatoes as opposed to, you know, beans. Generally, for saving seed, I'm doing it with beans or peas or that sort of thing. I was having trouble hearing. Was the second part of his question with regard to selecting varieties for your area or specifically?
No, I think his question was how do you select a tomato to save seeds from?
You want to look at your best plants and your best tomatoes, and those are the ones you really want to save your seed from. You want to look at, especially if you're growing an heirloom, well, even if you're dehybridizing a hybrid either way, but you really want to look at that, and you want to do more than one tomato. You want to have several different tomatoes from different plants. That usually will give you a better result in your seed saving. Did that answer your question?
Well, is that so? Would be selecting seeds a better way to find a particular? I mean, would that end up with a better crop for a certain area or a certain climate?
Oh, I
think better than,
yes,
you know, trying different varieties.
Go ahead, Samantha.
That could be possible, because what you're saying, if it's grown well in your area and you're selecting the best examples that you grew, will the next generation be
even better?
And I would say that's certainly a definite possibility and a good way to go about it, because by choosing the best examples and the best from the best plants, like Diane was saying, you're selecting for those characteristics, and you're hoping that you're going to see an even improvement in subsequent generations. So I would say yes.
And really, that's kind of how these heirlooms all started. I mean, they were at one time a natural cross, probably.
Sure.
And people looked at that in their garden, and they went, oh, I really like this particular, you know, tomato, and they picked like three or four of the fruits or whatever, and then they kept selecting those plants that had those characteristics and that fruit over a period of time in different generations.
Exactly.
A lot of times it takes quite a few generations to make sure that you get what's called a stable line. And then what happens once you have that stable line, the genetics are pretty, what I'm calling, they're not going to vary that much. Occasionally you might get one that you want to rogue out, but for the most part, they're going to be pretty stable all the way across the board. Does that help?
Yeah, that pretty much answers it. Thank you.
Good question.
Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking that.
Do you save seeds from your tomatoes, or do you buy them?
I both. I haven't saved seeds for some time, but when I was living in Duluth and having easier time with Brandywines and things like that, I was saving my seeds more regularly. And it gets back a little bit to what we were saying earlier too. Is I just think there's more of an emotional connection to your plants when you start them from seeds, but you start them from your own seeds even, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
So, and then you can also think that maybe you are, you know, doing just a little selection of your own, getting toward a plant that's working for your particular site.
Yeah. Well, and do you feel that way too, Samantha?
Absolutely.
That's
it's
great.
A little off subject, but I was, I've been saving seeds from a particular line of heirloom dry beans. And supposedly, you know, they're not supposed to cross-pollinate beans.
Okay, yes, that happens sometimes.
But it does. And so I saved seeds that I thought were pure from Hadatsa shield figure variety.
Uh-huh.
And so I planted them all, and they came up last year. And most were, except that some were these just beautiful dark red speckled. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. So now I'm going to you have these subsequent generations, and you play with things, and you see what happens, and you have that sort of like Eric was saying, emotional connection to, well, I helped this plant, and this is
right.
I'm going to see what happens.
Neat. That's right. Great.
That's wonderful. Well, we've been speaking to Samantha.
We have a call, though.
Yes. We have one more call.
Oh, we do.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Welcome, caller. Yeah. Comment or question?
I need to know something about varieties that are good for pots.
Oh, that's a good question.
We're right down on the shore and have never succeeded.
I can hear the waves in the background.
You can hear them in the background. With regular tomato and... You know, and we've had bad luck with even potted tomatoes.
Yeah, well, for potted tomatoes, and I'm sure Samantha and Eric can chime in here and Joan as well, but usually they have determinant, those that are only going to get so tall, or dwarf varieties. They're made for containers, and they'll be... I have a whole list of those at my office, so, you know, stop up at the extension office and I'll be glad to give you a whole list of those. But really, those are more, they don't have as big a root system. They work better in a confined area. Determinants will get ripe all at once. They don't continue to grow, so they don't need quite as many the root systems and nutrients out there. Samantha, you want to add anything?
That was what I was going to say.
Big pots or small pots? Do they want to be root-bound or...
Yeah, they don't want to be root-bound. So I would say minimum size 5 gallon or, you know, larger if you can do it, because you'll get better results. You'll get more production if you have more soil available for that root system.
And, of course, it'll be like a potting mix, right? So now...
Well, again, come to my office. I've got all these lists made up of all these type. I don't go out and buy potting mix in the bag. It really isn't a very good mix. You have to add stuff to it.
Okay. We'll be up.
Oh, sounds
good. We'll be knocking on your door. Thanks.
All right.
You're welcome. Well, Samantha, I want to thank you for joining us. We have your book here that we're looking at, The Beginner's Guide to Vegetable Gardening. It's awesome. Thank you for coming online with us and talking about tomatoes.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And have a good tomato year.
Yeah, let us know if what works well for you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Happy
Thanks
spring.
So much.
Yeah. And we're going to be having another guest on in the second half. It will be Dr. Qingben Cheng, and he has been working with his graduate students on some new tomato varieties by playing with chromosomes. And they're dwarf varieties that are short day, they're high producers, and they may be the new commercial varieties in Minnesota coming up. So,
non-GMO.
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
First, I'd like to let you know that support for Northern Gardening comes from Bucks Hardware, offering a full selection of gardening supplies, organic options, and weather-hardy annuals and perennials. More information online at buckshardware.net. And we're brought to you by Edwin E. Thorson Incorporated, contractors working to fill landscaping needs in the Northland, celebrating over 60 years of serving Cook County, 387-1644.
And Dr. Chen, are you on the line?
Oh, yes.
Well,
hello?
Yes, Dr. Chen, this is Diane Booth.
Hi, Diane. Hi.
Welcome to the show, and we have Joan Farnham on.
Hello.
And we also have Eric Hahn.
Hello.
Hi.
And we want to welcome you to the Northern Gardening Radio Show, and we've been just talking about heirloom tomatoes, and now we want to learn about what you and your students have been doing by changing chromosomes in the tomatoes to develop new tomato varieties. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you're doing?
Thank you. So first, I need to clarify a little bit about that.
Okay.
Right now, we are on the first step. So breeding tomatoes by rearranging chromosomes is our long-term goal.
Okay.
Okay.
As a first step, we were looking for the best tomatoes to start with.
So don't we all?
Yes.
Okay. So... That's why the first step, we are breeding for the new varieties that have not, they all have normal chromosome numbers. but can be used in our future enhancement program that's changing chromosomes. So any changes will bring a different trait. If the better than what we have, we may keep it. If not, we may just skip that. So that's the first initial step.
Okay.
Okay.
So you're starting with those tomatoes with normal chromosomes that are better, and then you're also keeping some of those that maybe have changes in chromosomes. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's a future plan. So
okay.
Right now we have all our traditional breeding and generated the tomatoes. So because back to 2006, when we moved from Pennsylvania to Minnesota, we just start to grow the heirloom tomatoes, but many of the heirloom tomatoes we grew here, and then we have to cage it and we stick in and take a lot of effort.
Yes.
Eventually, there were a few clusters and the fruits start to rip and then frost.
Welcome to Minnesota.
Yeah. So and then that's why we start to think about whether or not we can, create some tomatoes. They're, people like me, I'm just lazy. So I just grew tomatoes. I don't have to cage them and don't have to stick them. Just put on ground and wait for where and then they collect the fruit. So that's where we start to breeding for these kind of tomatoes. So.
Interesting. I wonder, what are there varieties that you're starting out with that we'd recognize?
Yes. So there's one. So there, we use the two major varieties. The one is we kind of continue screen. So from the one line, it's the Big Zack. So the Big Zack is the line that in the world the biggest tomatoes you can get.
The Big Zack.
Big Zack.
Yeah, Big Zack.
Okay, all right.
We don't use the Big Zack, the original hybrid line. So we actually use the Big Zack and the seeds we got, and we grew screen for the line.
Okay.
Is really stable, so it can produce like a 5 to 6 fruit per cluster, but it's a large fruit, about pretty much average 1 pound fruit. Use that one as the one of the parent plants.
Okay.
And another plant we use the plant. It's a very dwarf one. So we use that for the research.
Mm-hmm.
So research, we want to use the very dwarf ones and small space. We can grow the plants very well. So we use that one as another parent, and we did a cross.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then after a cross, we have you can generate all kind of, because they're far different.
Mm-hmm.
Already, so that's, and then we can generate all different kind of tomatoes.
So
we were looking at the really dwarf ones and very short growing season and high yield. So we have like a grew about 200 some lines, and then we found about 7 lines which right now we pick it and it's a really good, very short season growing. And all different kind of shapes. So that's what we start with.
So, Chang, then, when we're talking about this, when you're talking short season, are we talking 40 days, 50 days? What are we talking?
Okay, so we did the trial offset the last year. So about 45 days we started.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
With that size, and what size are the tomatoes?
The tomato is about like the plume set. It's like a meter-sized tomato. It's not that small, like, ripe tomato, yeah.
Okay. So are we talking 10, 12 ounces? 8 to 10 ounces?
They're smaller than that.
They're smaller than that. Okay.
Yeah, smaller than that. It's,
okay. So maybe 5 or 6 ounces, right around there. Just so people kind of, I'm trying to think what it looks like.
Yeah.
3 inches?
Oh, you mean the
fruit.
The fruit?
Yeah.
It's very small. It's relatively small. It's about like, I would say about like 1 ounce like per fruit.
Oh, okay.
It's about like 2 pounds.
It's like a cherry tomato.
Juliet.
A cherry, like a Juliet size. Okay.
It's a bigger cherry. If you say cherry, it's bigger. But is it smaller than the, what's that called? The Roman.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, just trying to picture what this looks like. Okay.
And so this is, like you said, this has been bred with traditional methods at this point, crossing varieties.
Yes.
And now you're narrowing it down to some hopefuls that you want to alter even further to get closer to the characteristics you're looking for. Is that right?
Yes. So right now we pick the three of them. Now we start to work for the further change the chromosome.
Wow. So yeah. can you say how you go about changing the chromosomes in a way a layperson maybe could
okay. So our listeners understand what we're talking about here.
This is a very basic. You know, the breeding through the rearrangement of chromosome patterns, it's not new. So we know that. So we have been used this in many breeding programs. So the commonly know the breeding program for changing chromosome patterns is called polyploidization. Basically, add another whole set of chromosomes into. For tomatoes, we know that the regular tomatoes have like 12 pairs of chromosomes in each cell.
Wow. So
it's 12 pairs. But if you're seeing it, it's just 12 chromosomes, and each has a double, two sets in the regular, normal tomato plant. But if you add like another set, for example, you get the whole set in, you can become the three sets, the 36 chromosomes,
right?
Four sets, and 48 chromosomes. That's the way the traditional polybreedization breeding, they breed for the new crops. So as well, you can see many of them are the product for that kind of breeding program. Like strawberries has eight sets of chromosomes, and the potatoes have four sets of chromosomes. They're all not the original nature.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So a good example people might know about would be like seedless watermelons.
The seedless watermelons is the three set of.
Yeah.
Also the natural ones like banana, it's also the three set of tomatoes, three set of chromosomes.
Right. Okay. So are you talking about doing something similar with the tomatoes to create this polyploidism, or I'm seeing this term aneuploidy?
So it's not exactly the same. So you can see if you add the whole set of chromosomes, and so far what we can do is if you add like a 16 set of chromosomes, you can imagine in the cell nuclear a whole pack of like 100 chromosomes, and the cell will be dying. So that means there is a limitation if you add the whole set of chromosomes.
Mm-hmm. So you can only add a few.
Yeah. So what we are doing is we just add the individual pair of chromosomes. Mm-hmm.
And do you
for
pick...
For example, for the tomato, we add like a one pair of chromosomes. That can going to be like a 12 different combination, which means that we have two set of original chromosomes, add the pair of chromosome 1 and the pair of chromosome 2. And it can kind of, it's going to be 12 different genotypes.
Oh, okay.
And so then from there, you can kind of select the characteristics by adding, if we add this chromosome, we get this characteristic?
Yes, yes.
So that's what you're doing to try to breed this tomato in a way that gives you the characteristics you're looking for.
Right.
It's going to take a long time, though, isn't it? I was hoping tomorrow.
But
it's not really like what you expect that long.
So what is your timeline?
The timeline for this is basically right now with the first year, we have been working on this for like 7 years. So the first year, when we start to release the three lines, which it not only can be used, so the all three lines are not only can be used for the study material for the next step, but also has very good potential for the market. So that's why we want to start to release the first three different varieties. I expected like next year. I'm kind of optimistic, but I expect next year we'll have some seeds available, because this year we are doing the large scale trier. So we got the from Green Bank Garden Center, they provide 1 acre for us to grow only these 3 different varieties.
Oh,
for
so
a large
they...
test.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wow. So I imagine what our listeners are wondering is, okay, so are these varieties going to be sold as plants? Are they going to be sold as seeds? Are they hybrid seeds? Are they going to be open pollinated? How does this work?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that that's all, because I have been the tomato grower for many years. I grew tomato myself. Mm-hmm. But first, this is a traditional kind of breeding, and it's their embryonized, which means it's not hybrid or mm-hmm. not otherwise. So you can just, so the you can buy the seeds.
Okay.
And or you can buy the plants from the from some kind of garden center or whatever to pick or license from.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So this basically, you know, once the seed, the seed is embryonized, so you can grow it generation by generation, so there's no change, because we have already confirmed that they're growing this for like a...
So they're going to be a new open pollinated variety.
Yeah.
If you save the seeds, can you have the same plant again next year then?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly the same.
Yep.
Oh.
They're a new open pollinated variety, which is really cool for gardeners.
Well, miniature is like how tall or how big a plant are you talking about in terms of miniature plants?
We have the average about like 8 inches to 14 inches. So if the growing in a good condition,
mm-hmm.
We plant in the open field that's pretty much above the ground, about like a average at like 12 inches, wow, or even shorter than that.
Oh wow! So how many? Yeah, how many tomatoes are we going to get off that little thing?
That's a good question. So we basically got this. It's amazing. So we have like average like a 50 to 100. So kind of from 50 to 120 fruit per plant.
Oh.
But they're fairly small.
Are they small, though, but yeah. Still.
Yeah.
Are these wide plants or what?
Are the tomatoes good?
So last year we grew like plants at a distance, about 1 foot average, and plant to plant. And after 2 months, literally we have like the whole land covered with pretty much 2 to 4 inches tomato fruit there.
Holy mackerel.
Wow. So you're breeding them to be short, so you don't have to stake them or do anything, but that you get really high yields in a short amount of time.
Yes.
So on a large scale, would this be mechanically harvested then even?
That's also one of our consideration at the beginning. We want to bring that, so if you get large scale, you can just machine harvest.
So are they a harder tomato then for machine harvesting, where they're not a real soft tomato? So they're not going to...
Red is kind of like, it's not that hard, but it's not soft. Also.
Okay, so it's so that it can be machine harvested.
Yeah, it can be machine harvested. So we have no problem to do the machine harvest.
So I think the most important thing Joan was getting at, how do they taste? Because that's our number one concern.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's also our concern, because we are looking at all those. It's kind of varies also for this,
mm-hmm.
but it's tasted just like a regular tomatoes. It's not at this moment. That's why we were looking for the next step to, you know, bring it even like a sweeter or taste it like for different kind of texture. But right now it's so that the brick. I think about 3.5 to 4.8. That's pretty much average tomatoes and the sweeter tomatoes you can get.
Are you talking about the bricks, the
bricks
sugar content?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sugar content is about 3.5 to 4.8. That's average.
Well, I mean, the chromosomes don't have little tags on them saying better flavor, you know,
yeah,
taste good.
Don't
so
you wish?
So how do you determine from, when you pick a, you know, to add chromosomes or whatever, that for better flavor, how do you do that?
So that's a kind of a hypothesis there. So you change the chromosome dosage, especially some of the genes might just along the different chromosome. If we get a combination right, they may produce the fruit have higher concentration of the sugars. Mm-hmm. So we do have some dwarf ones, and they had eight very sweet. My students said tastes like sugar candy.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
So the problem is the yield low. So we're looking for the better combination. That's like it.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to kind of balance the acid with the sugar. You want them sweet but not too sweet.
Yeah, I like the more acid ones myself. Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're hearing, I think?
Yeah.
But it sounds like you have a plant that has all the characteristics in terms of its growth habit, and but you're just now you're working on the flavor. Is that right?
Yes, we start to work on the flavor. We're trying to see whether or not you get all different flavors for a different, customers, consumer purpose.
Yeah, that's really important part of this, too.
Well,
really
and this kind of opens up another whole market where you could sell potted tomato plants where people could take them home, and they wouldn't, since they're so small, you wouldn't have to have a super huge pot for these, am I right?
Yes. So we often use that for a 4x4 inches pot. That's why you can put a pot, the plants into the pot and there for the market. So that's another idea. We were initially thought about. So every time people talk about organic fruits,
mm-hmm.
but if you get organic fruit, growing organic, everything organic, but you buy and then put at home, refrigerated for a couple of days, and it's not organic anymore. But another way, we are trying to think about whether or not we can deliver the plants. You just buy the whole plant. Get home, you pick the fruits anytime you need it.
Oh.
So for the container or the patio market, this would be awesome, right? I mean, they're also looking at commercial, but for people who just want to have a nice, small, high-yielding tomato plant on their patio, this is great.
Yeah, it has potential there. So that's why when we look at so initially we just for the study material we have not thought about put on market, but another professor looked at it and said, oh gosh, you need to put this on the market.
I see a long future of chromosome manipulation in tomatoes happening for a long time.
Yes, I can see that because. We plan to have pretty much 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put all the combination. We should be getting there. So all the different combinations, and then a few more years screen for the all the best kind of the best quality of the for all kind of phenotype we need, and then a few more years. I think we will continue to release some new varieties through this program. And especially for some of the tomatoes, we have a very unique tomato shape. So you can use for decoration. So that's why when we start to ask for name suggestions, people give all different kind of names based on the shape and the color of the tomato fruit.
Wow.
Hmm.
So because one of them, they name like a angry bird. It just like angry.
So are your students naming these varieties yet, or how is that going to happen?
We have collect about 60 different kind of name candidates. we have not confirmed the name yet. We want to have some opening from the farm.
Sure.
Yeah, some of these. So that another reason we think about this is also for the holiday plant because they look like just like Christmas light kind of figure.
Oh, yeah. An edible Christmas tree.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at a picture of some. I think from the article that came out in the CFANS, the University of Minnesota
the Extension magazine. Yeah,
It's got some photographs of photos, I think, look of those at these.
Pointy little.
Oh,
pointy little
so they come in all plants. Different shapes and colors.
Oh, it's They're beautiful.
Wow.
So this one, the some people like what's the yellow lights or Christmas lights. They get all different kind of limb suggestions because it looks like a really like the holiday night.
Yeah, they so, do.
So yeah. I want to know if you're gonna play with the chromosomes so you get like three different colors on one.
Oh, no. Three different colors on one.
Is that a possibility?
That's really hard.
Maybe seven more years from now, right?
Do you have a question?
It's possible. Yeah. So no, we have individual different colors, like a yellow colors. We have green color tomatoes, and then we have the real red color and the orange color. So.
Mm. Well, yeah, we can see on this photograph
they're
here.
They're pretty fun. And we've got a caller online, I believe.
The caller just has a question for the speaker. Is this the technique considered organic, and is it genetically modified? Would it be considered either one of those?
Good question.
Oh, that's a great question. So this basically, on one way, it's not the typical genetic modified. They talk you get a different gene there and modify the plants. This one, we all use the native chromosomes. You can consider it as kind of, it is genetic. If you consider the genetic means, that it is genetic modified. But it's not that kind of genetically modified. You're worrying about that. It can be used for organic. So it's a kind of a standard we can use for organic because if you say strawberry can be organic, right?
Right.
It's added a whole set of chromosomes.
It's already polyploidy.
So this one, after we added individual chromosomes, we can still think organic. If we, on the process, we don't use the transgenic, don't introduce any other genes there.
Only the tomato
genes. They're all
gene.
Tomato
It's only
genes.
Tomato right. genes, so it's not a GMO. So, and I wish we had another hour to talk to you, but unfortunately we're coming to the end of our time. We're going to have you back, Dr. Chen, to tell us what happened this summer. Would you be willing to come back on again?
Oh, yeah. So I'd be happy to do this.
That would be great. Thank you so very much for coming and telling us what's going on.
Well, you know, the best would be that you could come up here and visit with some of your plants.
Yeah, do a presentation. That would
be
awesome.
We could try eating your beautiful tomatoes.
Thank you.
I will do that.
Excellent.
Okay.
We will invite you up. Yeah. So,
we will.
So we'd like to thank you for joining us on Northern Gardening. We have a couple of quick announcements. One is...
We're running out of time.
Yeah. There's going to be an apple growing pruning workshop actually Saturday in Grand Portage, 9 to noon. There's a few spots left. We'll be talking about rootstocks, grafting, pruning. If you would like to attend, give me a call at 387-3015. And there's going to be a small-scale gardening program on Saturday, June 7th. So if you want to learn more about... growing bonsai or fairy gardens or railroad gardening, keep that in mind. So,
if you're looking for a garden space this year, we have some spaces available in community gardens?
I hope so. If you call and let me know, we'll look for one.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Yeah, because we did match someone who did call. We did find a garden space for him, and he's so excited. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, do call 387-3015. Tell Diane that you want a garden, or tell Diane you have an old garden. You'd love someone to work.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us in Northern Gardening. We'll see you next Thursday, May 8th, from 7 to 8 p.m. Thanks.